You want us to wait?
No.
Please read the 3 p.m. time certain.
Item 378, appeal of Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association against the hearing officer's decision to approve the application of Tuan Lu Akram Mohsen Associated Architects, applicant, and Holiday Park Plaza, Inc., property owner, to amend two previously approved subdivision with adjustment cases for a property located at the northeast corner of Northeast 16th Avenue and Clackamas Street, LU07166143ASAD.
The city attorney will describe the hearing process.
Good afternoon. I have several announcements to make that are required by state law before we begin the hearing. These concern the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and guidelines for presenting testimony. First, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. This hearing is designed only to decide if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. In terms of the order of testimony, we'll begin with a staff report by John Cole from the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to council. The applicant will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the applicant, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the applicant's and opponent's presentation. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. Finally, just a few brief guidelines for presenting testimony when you speak to council today. Again, a reminder, this is an on-the-record hearing. You must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer, but you may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that's not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to the council's consideration of that issue. And that concludes the opening announcements.
Thank you. Do any members of council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No council members have a conflict of interest to declare. Do any members of council have an ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside the hearing to disclose? No council members have ex parte contacts to declare. Do any members of council have questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin the hearing? We'll begin the hearing with the staff report from Bureau of Development Services, and they'll have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor, Councilors. My name is John Cole. I'm with the Bureau of Development Services. Before I begin the PowerPoint presentation, I think by way of introduction, I'd let you know that the issue in front of you here today is, on a fundamental level, a disagreement over what the appropriate size of a building on a particular piece of property is. The Ankrum Mohsen Architects, on behalf of their client, has proposed a building that the Neighborhood Association feels is too tall and is too large. There are some related concerns about some of the architectural elements, but I think those are secondary to the issues of size. This is also a case where history is important. Usually, we don't talk about particular building sizes in a land division case, but in this particular instance, the proposed building site is part of an earlier land division that was approved in 1996. And at that particular point in time, one of the conditions of approval that was attached to that land division was that the buildings that got built subsequently on the lots involved met certain standards or were in fact in substantial conformance with some building elevations that were included as exhibits. So for the remainder of my presentation, I hope to take you through the 1996 decision briefly, talk a little bit about the most recent 2007 decision by the hearings officer, and then describe the appeal in brief.
I just wanted, before you continue, for the record's sake, I have no ex parte conflicts to declare. I'm good to go for this hearing this case.
What I also would like to say is that there is a lot of detail involved in these cases, and it's not my intent as part of this presentation to go over all of that detail, but if you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them. As I had indicated, the purpose of the hearing is to consider an appeal of a hearings officer decision that would amend a 1996 decision that was a land division with adjustments. The amendment replaces an approved set of building plans with a larger set of proposed building plans that still meet the underlying high-density residential zoning district standards. The appellant is a guy, Kyle, who is co-chair of the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association. The applicant for the original amendment is a Tuan Liu of the Ancrum Moisen Architects on behalf of the property owner, Holiday Park Plaza, Inc. This is a zoning map of the property at issue. It's shaded in the center of your screen. I point out that it is located outside of the Central City Plan District. Surrounding neighborhood includes the Lloyd Center, kind of off the map to the left. To the right, you can see we get into a more traditional residential neighborhood configuration. Although these are zoned low-density, multi-dwelling R2, the characteristics of this neighborhood are predominantly single-family. The property itself is zoned high-density residential. The Lloyd Center is kind of over here in this particular area. You might recognize Wheedler Street up here along the
otherwise known as Wheedler Street.
Thank you, sir.
Not if you're a Wheedler.
I grew up in that neighborhood. That is Wheedler.
Thank you. And the Holiday Plaza Senior Living Center is located on these three particular tax lots located immediately to the south of the property.
So the movie theater is lower left, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
What's your landmark?
That's my landmark. Yes.
The only other item I'd like to point out on this particular overhead is you can notice that the block that this property is located on is also divided up into a number of other smaller properties, and these are townhome lots, and I'll talk about those in a little more detail. This green arrow that's located on the map is going to be the direction from which this next slide was taken. This is an aerial photograph of the property. You can see that currently it's a vacant, unimproved site that's been sort of cleared, graded, and available for development in one fashion or another. Across the street, there's multifamily development, and then you can see on the right side of the screen is the Holiday Plaza Tower. Again, just to give you a little bit of a flavor of the immediate neighborhood. This is a picture of the site taken from looking northeast. Some of these tan buildings are the side or rear of some of the townhomes that were approved in 1996 as part of the land division. This is looking south-southeast along 16th Avenue. Again, to give you a little bit of a streetscape, the red arrow that is a little hard to see here on this slide is the location of the development site. Immediately across the street, to the west of the development site, you'll have this particular multifamily building. In 1996, I had mentioned history is important. A land use application was approved that divided a 30,000 square foot site into 12 townhome lots and one lot that was designated for multifamily development. At the time that land division was approved, there were a number of adjustments that were also approved to heights and setbacks, not just for the multifamily lot, but also for the townhome lots. Townhome lots have all been built out. The only remaining property to be built on is the multifamily lot, lot number 8. Lot 8 was given adjustments from a minimum lot size requirement. At the time and currently, the minimum lot size in the R8 zone is 10,000 square feet. Lot 8 is approximately 8,000 square feet. There were some adjustments given to minimum dimensions of that lot. And then there were adjustments from a maximum height and from setbacks also granted in 1996. The approved site plan from 1996 is on the screen in front of you. The green star is located over Lot 8, which is the subject of today's discussion. I had mentioned earlier that these other townhome lots have been approved and have been built out. At the time that the land division was approved, there was a specific reference to some building elevations and building footprints for the subsequent development of Lot 8 and the townhouses. There were only two elevations included in the record from the 1996 decision. These elevations show what was the approved building, if you will, from 1996, as viewed from south across Clackamas Street, and as looking at the west side of the building. Of importance here, I've drawn in a red line at the top of the building. That is a 60-foot tall structure as drawn. There was text in the 96 decision that actually said a building could go up to 65 feet. I'd also point out on this drawing, along the west elevation, you might see that there are four stairways up to street entrances that go into dwelling units directly from the street. The actual street-level development of this particular building is a parking structure on the first level of the project. I'm going to fast forward to 2000 and start to show you what the proposal was in front of the hearings officer. It was for a project that would include 23 dwelling units, would be roughly 46,000 square feet in size, would be a seven-story tall building, approximately 75 feet tall. The setbacks of this particular structure have been moved a little bit to the south and to the west. There is a zero lot line setback from Clackamas Street, a zero setback from Northeast 16th Avenue. The setbacks have actually been increased a little bit from both the north property line and then from the private alley that this project would share with the remainder of the block. Now, these are drawings, elevations of the current proposal, and I'll apologize to the architect. The exterior of this building is actually proposed to be a light tan brick veneer. But by the time we got the drawing scanned and placed on the overhead, it's looking much darker than the building would in real life. I have included this 60-foot height line on the particular elevations that you're looking at so that you can get a feel for the difference between what had been proposed in 1996 and what is currently under appeal. All four elevations are shown in this current proposal, but to make a comparison to what you had seen from 96, this is the south elevation from Clackamas. This is looking at the project across 16th Avenue. This particular drawing is one generation earlier in the design development, but the massing and the scale of the building is accurate, and it shows the relationship of this building to the surrounding property. The application was reviewed against approval criteria in the code. The most important is the approval criteria for adjustments. In summary, the hearings officer approved the application. He found that the land division approval criteria were met, that the adjustment criteria were met. He did find in favor of a density transfer that was incorporated into the application, and he found that there was no significant conflict with the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Action Plan. I'm going to run over, Mayor, but with your indulgence, could I have an additional minute?
Yes.
I'll wrap up. In the appeal, the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association is objecting to three primary components of this decision. The first is that the density transfer upon which this building relies violates a particular code section, and I'll show you a picture and describe that in brief detail. They felt that the project does not meet the adjustment approval criteria and that the proposed buildings is not as good of a neighbor as what had been approved in 96. And then they cite a number of objectives and policies from the action plan to support their argument. In terms of the density transfer, staff had recommended approval of it. We believe that it's an appropriate finding that density be transferred from the Holiday Plaza site, which is developed with a single building. There's 15,000 square feet available to transfer. We think that's correct. And the adjustments, we believe, the criteria have been met. And we did not find that the Neighborhood Action Plan provided us with enforceable provisions to deny the project. And sorry to run out of time, but there's a lot of detail. I'll be happy to answer any questions that may come up during the hearing.
Any questions at this point?
So I don't know if this is the right time to ask, but at some point I'm going to want to better understand what it was that was actually agreed to in 1996. I heard you say that a specific building was approved, but I'm more interested in what the limitations of a project were in 96. In other words, what people reasonably could have anticipated could have been constructed on the site. So I don't know if now is the right time or you want to wait to the end.
I can answer that now just briefly, and then if you'll need more information, I'll return to it.
I've read some of the correspondence, and it would appear that some of those that live in the neighborhood were relying on the decision made in 96 as to the height of the structure that they could anticipate would be built there, and that this is higher than that. Is there some validity to that?
There is validity to that, Commissioner Leonard. In 1996, the land division with adjustments was approved, and there was a table. There was both a table that gave some height and setback information, and at that particular time, the height limit in the table was listed as 65 feet. Okay. There were specific setback adjustments given for the project, which was a 10-foot setback adjustment from the west side. It was shown as being 8 feet from the northern property line, and 0 feet setback from both the south and the east. There was also these specific building elevations that were referenced in 1996, and they showed a building that was 60 feet tall. And I think that it would also be fair to include a statement from that particular approval. Let's see if I can. When the 1996 decision was approved, there was a clause in it that says that the approval for the land division was so dependent on the designs of the buildings submitted that conditions of approval will require that lots be developed in substantial conformance with those designs. So it did contain that particular language.
How are you interpreting that language? What does that mean to you?
Staff has interpreted that substantial conformance language to mean that the current proposal is not in substantial conformance with what was approved in 1996. And that's why we wouldn't issue a building permit directly for a project that comes in the format that we're reviewing today. That's right. But the applicant has been notified of that, and that's why they've come before the city in the review process to try to get this particular condition of approval amended, and they're permitted to do that.
And that's helpful. So I guess I'm asking you, what is it that's changed in the intervening 12 years that would cause us to change those conditions of approval from 1996? If you could just very briefly summarize from your perspective what it is that was driving the staff to agree the conditions had changed enough to increase the height of the project.
Commissioner Leonard?
If you would like to save till the end, that's fine too, because it may come out during the testimony.
I'm not so sure that so much has changed in the city to cause the particular amendment as much as the current proposal does meet the underlying RH zoning district standards. And so the question that at least I had to wrestle with a little bit at a staff level is what was it about the 1996 decision that would prohibit a property owner from developing Lot 8 to its full development potential, if you will, under the RH zoning district standards? And I did not see an intervening requirement that would get in the way of somebody developing to the full RH zoning district standards.
Thank you for it.
So how does the density transfer impact that?
The lot number 8 that the applicants are currently proposing to build on is in a zone district which would normally allow a floor area ratio of 4 square feet of building for every square foot of lot that they're building on. And the project is asking for, well, and so the building elevations that I've shown you are larger than what would be permitted under that particular floor area ratio. But the city does also allow...
Without the transfer.
Allows property owners to transfer density from adjoining lots or lots within the same block. And it's an interesting discussion, but in this particular instance, the developer is relying on the transfer of 15,000 square feet of building area from the Holiday Park Plaza building to this particular lot to get to their 7-story structure. The Holiday Plaza Retirement Center, after you take a look at the underlying lot that it's built on, and then you look at how big the building is on that property, has 15,000 square feet of leftover available density, if you will. That property is under the same ownership as Lot 8 that's under discussion today. and they're interested in taking that leftover density from the Holiday Plaza Tower and assigning it to this vacant site.
Does the city have to approve that particular process, the density transfer, or is that accepted that if a adjoining property is used, then it's the right of the property owner to use that density transfer?
The density transfers are reviewed by the City of Portland. They're not reviewed through a public process necessarily, but they are important to this particular decision, and I think it's appropriate that they get discussed as part of this decision. But the applicants did submit a request to transfer that density in advance of this particular application, and it was approved at a staff level. I reviewed it at a staff level and felt it was appropriate as well. The hearings officer reviewed the density transfer mechanism and found it to be appropriate as well. But I know that there are people from the Neighborhood Association that disagree with that interpretation.
I think the question is, if we deny this application, does that mean that the FAR transfer cannot happen?
I might defer to the city attorney, but I believe it would, yes. I think that because of the nature of this property, if they want to build something that is different than what was approved in 1996, they're going to have to do it through a process that brings it back in front of city council.
Including a FAR transfer.
That's correct.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you. The appellant, please come forward. And because the staff report was 2 minutes over, we'll give you an additional 2 minutes, a total of 12 minutes for your presentation.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Potter, commissioners, my name is Harrison Pettit. I'm on the board of the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, the appellant in this appeal. I have with me Dan Kearns, who is our legal representative in this case, and joining us are supporters, fellow members of the board of the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, neighbors and representatives from the Irvington Neighborhood Association, and joining neighborhood with whom we've collaborated many times in the past. It's a privilege to be here before you to speak, to have an opportunity to appeal this case, but it is also cause for regret that this case, unlike so many land use developments in our neighborhood before it, could not find mutually amicable resolution. As you know, Sullivan's Gulch is one of the most densely developed neighborhoods in the city, and I say this with pride. The Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association has actively participated in the land use development process that has permitted well over 300 new units in our neighborhood in the last 7 years. We don't view urban infill as a compromise, but as an enhancement to our neighborhood. We live in Sullivan's Gulch because of the urban dynamism, not despite it. However, as Dan will elaborate, we feel that there are some major flaws in the hearings officer's decision that require your thoughtful attention. The significance of this case goes beyond the boundaries of our neighborhood. With all due respect to the inherent challenges of the task, we feel the Bureau's recommendation and the hearings officer's decision send the wrong signal to the public, who need to be confident in the city's processes and the decision-making. The basis of our appeal is centered on three critical points. The first, and I believe the most important, is one of fairness. A deal is a deal. For 10 years, this neighborhood has participated in this land use case. We were part of the subdivision and adjustment approval amendments in 1996 and the modification in 1998 in which the developer, the city, and the neighborhood thoughtfully and carefully agreed to a comprehensive development plan. This is how it's supposed to work in the city, and this was a successful example of that. The hearings officer's decision is unraveling that successful process. Second, we feel that further testimony will show that the hearings officer has misapplied the FAR transfer mechanism in this decision. And as Barack Obama has reminded us, words matter. In this instance, the accurate definition of the words lot and site, as applied in this case, really matter. Third, we feel the decision has neglected to suitably consider important elements of the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood plan. It calls for a smooth transition from a higher density outer section to the lower density neighborhood core. You saw the images of that. The decision allows the desired transition to be inverted from a 5-story building to the west on the outer portion of the neighborhood to a 7-story building as one moves toward the neighborhood's lower density core. Lastly, let me add that we respect and appreciate the landowners. They're our neighbors, Holiday Park Plaza, and an integral member of that neighborhood. And it is with some pain that we appear at odds with their current wishes for the property. However, as a board, we take our responsibility seriously and have passed three separate resolutions to oppose these plans. We are asking you to reverse the hearings officer's decision so that a more collaborative development process can resume that respects the hard work and compromise embedded in the precedent 1996 and 1998 agreements. Thanks.
Good afternoon, City Council and Mayor. My name is Daniel Cairns. I'm an attorney. I represent the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association. My address is 610 Southwest Alder Street, Suite 910. I think you have in front of you, and we also have this board showing the lot, the blocks involved here. Lot 8, this case involves Lot 8, the yellow lot on Block 177. Just below that is Block 178 and Block 179. I think Mr. Cole fairly presented the case and emphasized that history matters, and also in this case, size matters. Size in the sense that the original decision that approved the subdivision here, and I'm talking 13 lots were created in this subdivision approval in 1996, and also 17 adjustments. And not just the substance of this decision, but also the process that was followed that it came about. There was collaboration between the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, the Irvington Neighborhood Association, the immediate neighbors, and the developer all came before the city, starting at the pre-app conference stage. And you'll hear testimony from people who were there, who were part of the process. And at the end of this process, the project changed significantly, and what they came up was an interrelated set of 17 adjustments, creating these 13 lots. You can see how it's very, you know, cut up into small pieces on Block 177, but it works. The block is entirely built out now, except for Lot 8, and the decision that came out in 1996, I assume it's part of your packet, but what Mr. Cole quoted wasn't the condition, it was the conclusion of the entire case. This project for 13-lot subdivision with private alley meets or can meet with conditions of approval of four adjustments, all applicable requirements. This approval for land division is so dependent upon the designs for the buildings submitted that conditions of approval will require that the lots be developed in substantial conformance with those designs. And then if you look at the next page of the decision, it recites in painful detail all the adjustments that were granted, and significantly, Lot 8 is substandard in size. It was approved at, it's a 10,000 square foot lot size zone. This was approved at 8,905 square feet. So it's substandard size lot.
7,900, yeah, close to 8,000.
So it's a substandard size lot, and it's the last one to be developed. And what the applicant has come through is to amend the prior decision to take out the requirement that these be, or the reflection that these are all interrelated. And it undercuts the process and the reliance that the Neighborhood Association has placed in this project for the past 10 years. And I would suggest, too, another reason why I've submitted a letter, and along with it, sort of a cheat sheet of code sections I've excerpted in full, starting with the FAR transfer section. But also because this is a substandard size lot under the code, code section. It's on the second page of what I've submitted to. It's 33120.210. Substandard size lots in this zone can't be developed unless they meet these criteria. And this lot doesn't meet the criteria, namely that it had no adjoining parcels in common ownership. But it was approved in 1996 as substandard. So I would suggest to you the only way that it can be developed is under the 96 decision. And if you want to undo this one element of the 96 decision, you'll have to go back and reevaluate all 17 adjustments that were approved in that decision because they're all interrelated. And the significant limitation that was imposed for this proceeding is a height limit of 65 feet. And that's reflected in the drawings that were attached and incorporated in the decision. The Commissioner Leonard asked how this subdivision application, this adjustment, modification to the subdivision is interrelated with the FAR transfer. And the hearings officer looked at the FAR transfer provisions, which are on the first page of this sheet that I've handed you, that you've got in your packet, transfer of density of FAR. And he concluded that, well, lot and site are used interchangeably, and therefore their meanings and the terms are fungible. They aren't. If you look at these provisions in section 33120.205 sub E, they talk about how to calculate FAR, how far you can go with it, what development standards might be applicable, zoning, ultimate density. But one provision talks about whether you can do it or not. So none of these provisions apply until you can transfer FAR, and it's subsection E4. And it says, in pertinent part, except for transfers from sites of landmarks, because you have special rules for landmarks, you can transfer FAR for landmarks within 2 miles, so you're pretty liberal about FAR transfers for landmarks. The transfers may only be between lots within a block or between lots that would be abutting except for a right-of-way. And you define in your code very precisely what a lot is. It's a legal lot. It's something that's created by a subdivision or a partition. It's not a tax lot. And what Mr. Cole showed you with the arrow showing the flow of density up from the other blocks, those were tax lots. Those were not legal lots. Your code defines a lot as a legal lot, consistent with state law in Chapter 92. What we show here are the lots that were created through these subdivisions, the lots on Block 177, the legal lots on Block 178, and the legal lots on Block 179. Under your code, you can't transfer FAR except for lots within a block, and the only exception is if you cross a right-of-way where there are two lots would be abutting except for the right-of-way. This project cannot be approved without the FAR transfer, and the FAR transfer that the hearings officer approved violates your code. Lot and site mean very different things. A site is a collection of lots and tracts, all in common ownership. So I would agree that the site here is everything that the applicant owns. A lot is a specific created legal lot. The subdivision in 1996 created these lots on Block 177, including Lot 8, and the other lots you see illustrated on Block 178, 179. You cannot transfer the FAR from these blocks to Lot 8. It can't be done consistent with your code.
Why do you have that Lot 5600 in green? Is that one that is eligible?
That's the only one that could possibly be eligible.
How many square feet?
It's 50 by 100 square foot lot in Portland.
5,000.
Why isn't the other Lot 8 next to it eligible?
It's not abutting. Besides, well, also the FAR really has to come from Block 179 because there's a giant building on 178. It's the huge Holiday Park retirement home is there. So it's my impression there is no FAR to transfer from Block 178. But for sure, the theory that the hearings officer was operating under, and it was illustrated in that drawing that Mr. Cole showed you, isn't consistent with your code. Lots and sites are very different things under your code. And neighborhood plan, it does impose requirements on this. Land use decisions, especially when you're modifying prior land use decisions, have to be consistent with a comprehensive plan. And this comprehensive plan provision that requires a smooth transition, it means something. Smooth transition, I mean, it's an ambiguous term. You get to interpret it, but it doesn't mean tall buildings at Lloyd Center, then shorter buildings, then this tall building, and then shorter buildings. That's not a transition, much less a smooth transition. And so in this case, I think staff took the position that there wasn't a significant difference between 65 feet and 75 feet. We would beg to differ because the original deal, the agreement that was struck in 1996 that has held for all these years, provided that smooth transition. So I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions you might have.
Questions?
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from persons who support the appeal. Do you have a sign-up sheet for that?
We do. We have 8 people signed up. The first 3 are Bonnie Metzer, Peyton Sneed, and I believe it's Corey Lutz. L-U-T-Z is the last name.
We're actually going in a sort of a logical order and have our order within our group. I'm going first because I was the one person who was involved in the 1996-97 decision, and Bonnie lives on that block and also knows about it. My name is Charlotte Uris. I live at 2526 Northeast 10th Avenue. As past land use chair of the Irvington Community Association, I was literally at the table when the original proposal for this block was made in 1996. The Sullivan's Gulch Land Use Chair and I sat at the pre-app conference with the developers, the planning, transportation, and other city representatives, and looked at the original computer sketch plan. A brief response to the proposal was made by each person at the table. Generally, everyone appreciated the attempt to bring high-density housing of this scale and height to the west end of the neighborhood, housing which provided a smooth transition to the lower density of the neighborhood core, as the neighborhood plan says. Everyone had critiques of the actual plan, however. There were serious problems with design, transportation, parking, fire, and other issues. As the hearings officer stated in the later decision, this is a difficult site, in quotes, and the developers were encouraged to get experienced professional help to create a successful development proposal. The developers hired a very good architectural firm, and eventually, after much thought and discussion, a good proposal was submitted that many saw as a positive model of design and creative solutions to issues. The developer proposed attached housing units on 12 lots and a condominium building housing 20 units on one larger lot. The attached housing towards the west and north would be sensitive to the heights of the 2 large single-family houses on the block and would be compatible with the scale of the surrounding neighborhood homes. These homes and the alley access to them have already been built. The proposed condominium building for Lot 8 was about the height of the 4-story Lloyd Place apartments being built across the street to the west in the higher density Lloyd District Central City area. The proposed 4-story condominium building with parking was 60 feet high. In March 97, a hearings officer approved a 13-lot major land division and alley with adjustments on this block. The approval was subject to conditions, most significantly. A, the final plat must include the following. I'm now quoting from the hearings officer. 1, the final plat will include the statement, quote, this plat is subject to the conditions imposed by the City of Portland in hearings officer file number 9601106-SUAD. 2, Lot 8 shall be developed in conformance with exhibits C6, 7, 8, and 9, and those are the exhibits that have been mentioned that are the specific designs and conditions and adjustments of that decision. In conclusion, the hearings officer states, this approval for the land division is so dependent upon the design for the building submitted that conditions of approval will require that the lots be developed in substantial conformance with those designs. There is a development blueprint for this block and the lot. Legally, this substandard RH lot plat must be developed in substantial conformance with the 1997 City of Portland Land Division decision. The current proposal does not conform at all with the subdivision and design conditions because it's too high and too massive. The proposal should be denied, and I would add a deal is a deal.
My name is Bonnie Metzer. I live at 1608 Northeast Halsey Street, and I'm a longtime resident of the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood. My house is one of two 100-year-old houses on the block where the proposed development is to take place. My house is on the southeast corner of Northeast 16th and Halsey Streets. The Lloyd Place apartment building, which Charlotte spoke, is to the west of my house. I attended all of the neighborhood meetings concerning the building plans for Lloyd Place. I supported the building design and wrote a letter to the Portland Planning Bureau voicing my support. It was a good transitional area from the mass of the Lloyd Center. I also attended all of the neighborhood meetings related to Brownsfield Place subdivision and the building plans. Therefore, that is the 96, referred to in this case as the 96 decision. I made an appearance before the Bureau's hearings officer, who considered the initial application subdividing these vacant properties and the proposed building plans for the condominium and the row houses. Colin James, owner of the other old house located on the southwest corner of Northeast 17th and Halsey Street, was also in attendance. We both enthusiastically endorsed the proposal. We felt that the size of the row houses and the condominium building were compatible with the surrounding area. We were particularly pleased with the scale and sensitivity of the architectural design. I believe the hearings officer, in this case, should have denied the application for the revisions, because the BDS treated the matter in some respects as if it were an initial application under the present code, and in other situations was willing to adopt the concessions, I would say, that were allowed in 1996. In other words, the numerous adjustments that were made in the 1996 matter were part and parcel of the history in this case. BDS seemed to be trying to have it both ways. Am I supposed to stop now?
Your time is up. Could you finish your sentence?
Pardon me?
Could you finish your sentence?
I think I have already. Thank you.
My name is Guy Lutz. I live in Holiday Park Plaza and have lived there for 23 years. There are only about 139 people who have moved in after I moved in 1985. I have served on the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Board. I have served as the Land Use Committee Chairman in very quiet times, I must admit. I was at the prior hearing, and I didn't testify because I was given a little yellow slip that said you should be well-dressed. And I looked like I had been pushing a cart from Safeways, and it wouldn't look very nice. I hope I look somewhat better this time, but this is a new experience for me.
You got a slip from the city?
Yeah, there was a kind of a thing passed out at the door that said suggestions for
lucky they don't make us comply with that before we show up back here.
Look
at this.
Look at Commissioner Leonard's tie.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I have a brief time. I live on the 15th floor, and I have a chance to look down on the subject property and support the 1966 decision, which says there should be a transition from the commercial neighborhood to the west down to the residential street and houses on 17th Street. And now I see we come down a little bit, and then we go back up, and then we go down again. This doesn't seem to me to be a kind of a smooth transition. So I would support the work of the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Board in this instance, and that's all I have to say.
Did you call the next hearing?
They seem to be going out of order. Is there?
Did you? Who did you?
Well, Charlotte said you were coming up at a certain time.
Lynn Coward, and my name's Peyton.
Okay, I have Peyton Sneed, Lynn Coward, and Daniel Kearns next. So.
Go ahead.
What about Richard Loy?
Lovey.
Why don't you come on up? Okay, and then Dean Smith.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm Lynn Coward at 1427 Northeast 17th. I'm coming in, we're kind of in chronological order. I bought into the first unit here, and I just want to tell you a little bit about our expectations. When we bought in, we saw that the whole plan developed. I have a background in design, and what I really liked was that this was a plan thing that held together in design, which was really important in a small space, that it be coherent. And I like that. And then after the 12th row house was sold, we all got together at McMiniman's in the side room, and we went around the table, and we said, why did we come here? What is it? And it was like a unanimous thing. We want to participate in the urbanization, infill urbanization of Portland. It was really a commitment to this, and we felt proud of ourselves. And the AIA came out and looked at it. Randy Gregg wrote about it. Gordon Oliver said, here's the new Portland. This is exemplary of what Portland is becoming. And this is the way we have proceeded. In 2003, Alan Kravitz came to us. He had developed the 1620 building, and he wanted to buy the property and develop the condo building. He met with our block. This was an informal, there was not a formal land use review. BDS said that as long as they were within the envelope of what had been permitted, that we could, that they would not have to go through a formal process. So we met with our land use committee, we met with the block, and then we met with the board. And I have a memo to Eric Enstrom I pulled out of my file saying, we support this building. This was a 65-foot building of 18 units. So we are, as a block, we knew what we bought into, and we are supportive of it. What we want at this point is not to have it get larger. We have seen the plans, and the plans keep staying the same. They're larger, and I think the applicant feels they have the right to do what they want to do, and we disagree, and that's, I guess, why we're here. But when you calculate, it's not just the additional 10 feet, it is the far with it. So the building then, if you get to it, it increases the building square footage by 44%. That's significant to us.
Yeah, can continue.
Oh, I thought that was the end of me. No. I don't know how to say, this is a painful part of this because these are our neighbors across the street. And it has not been, in fact, I had even suggested to the former owner who I knew had a problem that he talk with Holiday Park Plaza because they would make fantastic neighbors. They are a great institution. We would just like them to be in the same size as what they started out.
Good afternoon. My name is Peyton Sneed. I'm with the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association. I'm the co-chair with Guy Kyle. I've been a board member for about 7 years, and I'm an acting land use chair. I also like to repeat Lynn's sentiment about Holiday Park Plaza. In fact, we hold our monthly board meetings there, and as long as I can remember, we've always had a resident of Holiday Park Plaza on the board. So we're here reluctantly. I'll go ahead and read my prepared statement. The Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association urges the City Council to repeal the hearings officer's decision and allow Holiday Park Plaza to develop Lot 8 in accordance with the land use agreements of 1996 and 1998. In fact, our board of directors has voted on 3 occasions to oppose the proposal as it's currently envisioned. We voted once to oppose the proposed amendment to the decisions. We voted a second time to appeal to this council. And we voted again to acquire legal counsel for this appeal. And it was a remarkable show of consensus by the board that these motions passed unanimously with one abstention. I'm sure each member of our board had different reasons for voting the way that they did. And I'd just like to share some of the sentiments that I think represent where the board's coming from. It's a very difficult decisions that were made. They were carefully considered and discussed on numerous occasions, and we've tracked this project very carefully and tried to work with the development to something that's mutually agreeable. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any middle ground here. We believe that it's unjust and unfair to give one property owner enormous benefits and heap the burdens on all the others. We believe that the proposed building is far more massive than the one proposed in 96 and 98 plan, and the mass would create too great a burden on these surrounding homeowners. We believe BDS and the hearings officer were either unaware or failed to recognize the cumulative effects of the proposed development, the changes. I think the board agrees that a 32,000 gross square foot building with a maximum allowable building height of 65 feet on a substandard RH lot is acceptable. We believe that a 46,233 gross square foot building with a maximum allowable height of 75 feet on a substandard RH lot is not acceptable. All the parties to the agreement in 96 and 98 and those who looked at property and were interested in living in Sullivan's Gulch looked at the exhibits in that plan and at the building height that was allowed when they did their due diligence. So we believe it's kind of unfair at this point to go back and to change the rules. We've also had our citizens investigate the FAR transfer and find that to be illegal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, members of council. My name is Dean Smith. I live at 3036 Northeast 19th in Irvington. I've been there since 1985. I'm a past president and former board member of the Irvington Community Association. I currently serve as co-chair of the Land Use Committee. The Irvington Board strongly supports the appeal put forth by Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood, and we've appropriated funds to join with Sullivan's Gulch in hiring counsel for this appeal. This is a matter and a case we take very seriously. We believe that the hearings officer, as you heard, has erred in this approval of amendments to the 1996-98 cases. Mr. Kearns has gone over our legal arguments with you, but I'd like to impress upon you why we believe it's important for the council to make the right call in this case and why the 96-98 decision should be upheld. A fundamental issue here is the transition of height and density, as we've talked about, from the central city to the neighborhood. As plan manager of the central city plan back in the 1980s, I became very much aware of the need to establish transition areas between the higher densities of the central city and the sensitive residential neighborhoods that surround it. Now, as a citizen and a neighborhood association leader, I recognize even more the importance of proper transition into the neighborhoods. And that's what I believe was fundamental to the 1996-98 case and is central to the outcome today. The applicant's proposal is inconsistent with the transition to the neighborhood that the 1996-98 case established. A 75-foot tall building would represent a step up, not a step down from the apartments to the west that stand between the central city and the neighborhood. Moreover, the massing of the structure that would be possible if council were to allow an FAR transfer here is fully 44% greater than that which was established by these prior decisions and what is available under the base zone. That's half again more massive of a structure than what the neighborhood's property owners on the block and nearby residents bought into and understood was the legal limitation for future development on this parcel. And I'll point out again, as others have, that this is a substandard size lot. It's 8,000 square feet, not 10,000 square feet for which the 75-foot height limit is based. The 1996 decision resulted in a reasoned, well-balanced plan for the future development of the block. Since then, others have made decisions to invest in and or live on this and adjoining blocks based on a belief that the decisions made in the 96-98 proceedings represented the city's assurance that the development plan for the block was approved, final, and a done deal. To overturn the 96-98 decision at this point would not only undermine the faith that we place in the city's